Jackson Brown. And his new album, his first one, in fact, released in England. Close friend of Andy Warhol's and compatriot of his. And we'll be playing the rest of that album next week. And,
By Hollywood.
You have a good comment about Andy Warhol.
You soup things up.
Right. How's England? You're going to be over here for how long?
I think a month.
Right. And we'll be getting your concerts, the details of those, and the What's On spot, which comes directly afterwards. But are you going to be doing anything while you're over here other than just playing? I mean, are you going to be meeting anybody? Or you were saying that you've been stuck in your hotel room most of the time.
Well, I just got off that plane. I'd been painting before I left, so I've been up for 4 days. But I managed to get in 4 hours sleep outside of the hotel. It sounded like one of those, you know what a tether ball is?
No.
Over there, they have this thing that it's a pole, and they hit the ball. It's one ball that goes around and around as they hit it. And it sounded like a tether ball out on a parking lot on Saturday when school's out or something, pinging back and forth. It was like some kind of torture.
Before we get on, play a little bit of the first record. We were having a conversation some time ago about Andy Warhol and about, if I remember right, you were saying, I think part of this is going to be in the Melody Maker next week, but I think you were saying that Andy Warhol had kind of hyped things up, souped things up, as you said, and because of that, a lot of good artists and a lot of good things are getting overlooked in America.
Franz Kleist was one.
I can ask you to give a few examples, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of other people that nobody's even heard of. Arnett Coleman. That didn't help, him, I don't think.
Right. There's a new Arnett Coleman LP just out over here, which I was going to play
for myself.
I think that must be the new one in the States.
I saw him before I left the airport,
yeah. Are you very keen on that? You're very keen on that kind of jazz.
Well, I don't think he's playing jazz. I think the drummer and the bass player are playing jazz, but I don't think he ever has been.
I mean, how do you relate him to your own music, if at all?
Not at all, but that's probably why I like him so much.
Yeah.
I mean, musically.
Let's start right at the beginning of your career and way back. Safe as Milk, Electricity. Electricity by Captain Beefheart, who's with me here in the studio. I'm going to spring this one on you. When,
bring it.
Here we come. When I said to the lady who helps me out there in the studio that we've got Captain Beefheart on the program tonight, she said, who exactly is Captain Beefheart? Well, I think she meant what your real name is. Have you got any answer to that?
Dan Fleet.
Right, well, that's your name.
That's it.
No more quick personal
identity. Her name is Jenny.
Right, you've got it. You've got it. I thought you were going to bring out something surprising, but I'll leave it at that.
No, I'm not that weird. No, I'm just kidding.
Electricity was your first album to be released over here, at least, from Safe as Milk, right?
Yeah, I don't know. A minute ago I heard that A&M put some stuff out of Who Do You Think You're Fooling out of the frying pan into the fire. Before that, that's the first album, yeah.
When that album came out, and when you first came to England, those were the days, it must have been about 66 or 67, I should think.
66, I think.
Yeah, just before Firepower and so on, which is significant.
Oh, yeah.
Right, I mean, before Hate Ashbury and so on. You were one of the, I should think, the two or three main groups in Britain, or to come to Britain, who were identified with a kind of psychedelic Firepower kind of movement. Down in the Middle Earth, John Peel used to have you on there a lot.
Nice man.
Right. Do you look back upon those days with regret?
Not really, no.
I mean, regret that they passed?
Not particularly, other than the fact that things have become so... I don't know how to explain it. So things that now... It's like one big thing of dough with a flower stuck in it now. To me, in a lot of ways, you know, not some of the people, of course, you know, but flower power in the first place. I mean, the idea, but for a better evolution, we could have been picked. I don't like the idea of picking flowers. I thought it was corny, really. I like them where they grow, not picked and waved in the air like that. I don't like that that much.
Yeah, you came, if, as we said, you came.
They weren't really doing that here, were they?
Not so much. That was
more over there.
But, I mean, you tend to get the dregs of that kind of movement over here. You know, it manifests, if if it's a good movement in the States, and if it's a bad movement, it tends to manifest itself, I think, in a more diluted form.
Too bad they do that here. They shouldn't do that.
As you came, like we said, just before the whole firepower thing, did you feel in any way that was ripping off or adulterating something that you'd got going beforehand?
Well, definitely. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I do.
I remember you talking before about also that you felt you'd been slightly ripped off by at least one well-known artist. I mean,
yeah. Well, I'm not saying I wouldn't really say that he's an artist, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about Frank Zappa. Right?
Yeah.
We were not going to mind, and we won't go into it any more than that. But you seem to feel a lot of your own material hasn't got to the public that it should have done.
Well, I think that it was posed as more of a freak show rather than just art, and I didn't want anybody to take hard narcotics just to listen to me, because of the fact that I don't take them, and nobody in the group does. And being a selfish artist, I wanted people to hear it the way I thought of it, which was without any narcotics at all or anything like that.
Yeah. Can you clear up your attitude to drugs a bit further? Two examples. One title track, I Feel Like Acid. And I think in the Rolling Stone...
You
said.
Not acid.
Acid.
A-H-C-I-D.
Acid. Right.
Yeah. Texas, I guess.
One of my favorite interview quotes of all time, if I've got it right, in the Rolling Stone, your interviewer asked you why you had this big thing about drugs, at least in your music.
Big thing.
Yeah, and I'm told that you said, well, I've only been down once in the last 2 years, and man, you people are really brave. Can you clear up about your attitude to drugs in that area? I mean, is that a true remark, for start?
Say that one more time.
The interviewer asked you what your attitude was to drugs, and you said, well, I've only been down.
Oh, I mean, drugs make you down. I mean, how can it's obvious, ingesting poison. Right out front, well, why ingest poison? That's the opposite of what I think that the people are really looking for, I hope.
You don't think that you've always been, your image at least, has always been tied up with acid rock or whatever, or that people have always associated you with something to do with the drug culture?
I may be naive, but I didn't think so. I may be. I mean, I just put my paw out in a time that was that way, I think, don't you?
Yeah, you mean it was just, in a sense, it was something other than drugs that was just happening at that time?
The times.
No. How have they changed, though? I mean, how do you feel that your music will still relate to people at the moment? Because, you know, when you started, at least in England, you were in a very specific context, you know, things were happening that you were really right at the head of. Nowadays, that's not so true. Does that worry you? I mean, how do you operate musically?
Well, I've never even thought about anything like that, really, frankly. I haven't ever worn a watch or read a book.
So to you, it's just a matter of picking up your guitar and playing?
Not my guitar. Yes.
Picking up the band.
Yeah, sure. That's what I do,
I was going to ask you to tell us a bit about the album that you've been putting together at the moment. We've got one in the studio, which is the last one. You've been working on one since then.
The Spotlight Kid,
right,
as opposed to the new one.
Well, yeah, if you tell us a bit about both of them.
Well, I don't know what to say about it, other than the fact that I wrote most of the stuff on the Spotlight Kid on a harmonica, as opposed to a piano. That's about the only difference I can... And the feeling, I like the feeling a lot better. But I have a new engineer now, a fellow named Ted Templeman, that I think is going to be a lot better. Because he doesn't think I'm so weird. I have a lot of trouble with that. Yeah, I do have a lot of... Going back to what you were saying, I do have a lot of trouble with that. They can't believe that my imagination is just an imagination, unaltered.
You mean?
Which is funny to me. I mean, it's really funny. I mean, there's been a lot of painters throughout history.
You mean you don't want people to think that you're weird?
Well, I don't mind what they think. It's just that I don't want them to connect my imagination to poison.
Going back to that
album. Oh, you like that.
I'm not sure if they do, really. I think it's unfair.
Well, I think some people do, but...
Yeah.
Mainly the people in the record business rather than the audience.
Let's play a little bit off that. The last album, which was released over here, The Spotlight Kid, title track of Captain Beefheart's last album to be released in this country. And Captain Beefheart, of course, is Don Van Vliet, who's with me in the studio at the moment. Can you tell us a little bit about the album that you've just made in the States after this one that's coming out over here in the near future?
Well, I haven't recorded it yet, but I have a lot of things planned. I wrote this album on the way to Yale from Boston in a car.
The whole album?
Yeah. So the name of it is Brown Star, and one of the tunes is named Knock Knock Rock Rock, and one of them is named Spitball Scout Baby. And it's very heavy, it's a very dense feeling, this album, as opposed to Crown Mask Replica or something like that. There's a wide area.
Your present band has two lead guitarists, doesn't it?
I have a fellow named Wingdale Fingerling on guitar, Zuthard Rollo on another guitar, and now Rocket Morton, the bass player, has gone over on the guitar. And I have a fellow named Woody Horn on bass.
When we were talking before, you said that having two guitarists was like having two snakes hissing your way.
Yeah, because of the, but I like that. Now I have three.
Three?
Three. At once, yeah.
And that's in the band that's going to be playing in London?
Sure, yeah.
Right, well, the concert's in the Albert Hall, and more about that in the What's On spot in just a minute. Dan Vliet, Captain Beefheart, thanks a lot for coming into the studio.
Thank you very much.
You're racing off the old grey whistle test, where you can actually see the captain live on the TV in about 1.5 hours from now. So I'll let you get after that, and best of luck with the concert.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for coming in.